We are trying to reach out to the supermind through the mind. And our situation is much like the Pandit who asked once a group of people, "I have never seen a pig. Can you tell me what a pig looks like?" And one group of people said, have you seen a mouse?" He said, "Yes." "Okay, expand the mouse a little, make it bigger, it'll become a pig." The second was smarter. He said, no, it's not like that. "Have you seen an elephant?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Compress the elephant a little bit, it will become a pig." And the Pandit says, okay, now I understand. So, the mind, we read about the life in that world before the fall. But the mind cannot conceive it because it has to conceive on the basis of its own images. That's how we see that how when we conceive of Sri Krishna's eternal ras, what we turn it here, it becomes our favorite garba ras. It's all right as a dance, but what that ras is to keep perfect step, perfect rhythm with the divine is something we can't even conceive of. And so we have a similar story in the Bible, Paradise Lost. When we hear about Adam and Eve who are in their primal innocence, they don't have sin, guilt, shame, any of these things. There's no error possible in that world. Till one day Eve offers the apple and Adam eats it. And when he eats, they are driven away from the Eden. And they are struggling on earth with that apple, half-eaten apple. Now that apple has blossomed into artificial intelligence and whole, industry. It has become a doorway to another kind of information. All for that apple. But was it a wrong thing to eat the apple? No, Sri Aurobindo would say. That's why we have not only paradise lost, but also paradise regained. There is something which we gain while going through this process. And what that something is, among many other things, there are many other things we gain. A kind of knowledge which is not accessible to the gods. A knowledge that comes only when we experience the salty taste of tears. A love that springs forth from the heart. When there is an extreme opposition to all that you hold as beautiful, true, and yet all this gods don't experience. Mother once said, they don't know what love is. Because nothing opposes them. A courage that springs up. That's why human beings with all their defects are the favorite of the divine. He comes here, chooses his earth for his leela. He doesn't go to swarg to do his leela. Swarg he goes only when these fellows are in distress, they call SOS. And then he goes to teach them all, put them in their rightful place. Otherwise he doesn't go there. So most importantly, the leela of the divine, we as human beings are specially privileged to experience it. Privileges that very, very often we don't even understand or realize. So nevertheless, life, which is the life of the divine soul before the fall, and life as we experience after the fall are very different. So each soul there is aware of the one self, call it itself, whatever way, of the divine self in everyone, each and every one. But here we are aware of tu and me and you. And tu and me. And ends up with tu, me. That's what it is said. That's why it's a very good term. Why? Because in each individual, the one divine has taken a particular standpoint. It's very interesting. Now, as far as the divine is concerned, he knows all the other standpoints. But when he takes a particular standpoint, the frontal personality that we call as ourselves is glued to this standpoint. It's like a person who has made many movies and he has made a particular movie and he knows the end of the movie. Like sometimes you see series of movies coming, the person has conceived what they are going to be. And when we watch the film, we watch a portion of it, we watch part one, and we don't know what's going to come, and we draw conclusions based on that, that probably the part two will be like that. And it may or may not be right, but that's how the mind tries. Mind tries to understand the unknowable in terms of the known. So when it conceives the gods, it sees the gods like us, even divine is like us. So he will punish us, he will reward us, he will hold us guilty, or he will be very happy when we sing a praise. He is very happy if we offer money and he gives us special privileges. And he is very annoyed if somebody does not remember him. These things are important for us to grow into the divine consciousness. But the divine action is not based on that. Oh, somebody, therefore I will keep closer. We grow closer. Divine is close to everyone. But this is the standpoint that the mind takes. So what really is the mind as we enter into this chapter? Mind and supermind. So how does the mind operate? Mind operates characteristically by division, what is called as calculation, hisab, kitab. Division, addition. So when we say whole, so mind says, okay, whole means all of us together. So you say, no, that's not the whole. The whole is also all other creatures together. Okay, all creatures together. That's not just the whole. All this material universe. Now mind is beginning to feel dizzy. All the universe together. Then you say, sir, this is only one material universe. There are countless universes. So the mind will say, hold on, I'm very sleepy. Can we change the subject? But supposing you conceive all the universes, gods, titans, all the worlds together. So what is happening to the mind? You say, now this whole, all that you have conceived, it is trying to do it, stretching in images. So after that, you tell him, see, there is something yet beyond. The moment the mind tries to go beyond this conception, it falls asleep. And we call it trance, meditation, wonderful. Because it cannot. By its nature, if the mind tries to approach the divine, beyond a point, it enters into a state of vast impersonality. It's all right. It's a step or a stage in the process. But then in that vast impersonality, when it enters, it loses hold on all this earthly reality. If one is in that state and someone suddenly wakes us up and brings us out and says, do you know where you have kept this particular thing? And one is all completely lost. But in the supermind, they are held together all the time. That's why when mother would go into the deep trance, there is a story which Champaklalji recounts. And the mother suddenly, after coming out of that state, she says, you think I do not know what is going on? I am fully aware of all your thoughts, of the ticking of the clock, everything. She may or may not speak about it. She may continue in that state. That's her own thing. But all of them together, our mind will burst off. That's why the evolution is a step-by-step process. And one of the simplest and best steps to help the mind evolve is the life divine. Because it is supermind, supramental consciousness and vision coming very close to us. And so by coming in, by reading the life divine, we start coming in contact with the consciousness that is behind these words. And it's amazing how Sri Aurobindo has presented all these mysteries in such a way as never before. It is, English language has been blessed because of Sri Aurobindo. So now we come to mind and supermind. So can this mind be transmuted into the supramental consciousness? Well, voices of tradition say, they go on to say that all this is the creation of mind. Mind is the author. Mind is a consciousness of division. It has to aggregate plus, plus, plus. It's like the person who asked, how many people will come in the marriage or in a party? So, ladke wale ki taraf, ladki wale ki taraf, boys side, girls side. Then they say, okay, those friends, that friends. Ultimately, you have to draw a line. Otherwise, you'll call the whole earth. Because everybody is connected to somebody else. You draw a line, say, no, no, I cannot accommodate more than this. But this is how the mind operates. It cannot conceive of anything more. It divides. Now, this division is characteristic of mind. And when it tries to unite, because behind there is always unity, the striving for unity, it remembers it fell from there. It tries to do it from the standpoint of its own unique standpoint. That's why dreams of brotherhood fail. All of us are brothers, provided you believe what I believe in. We all should be tolerant of each other. But if you don't accept this doctrine of mine, I'll be very intolerant against you. We are watching all this, no? All the time. So it cannot, because it wants to unify everybody based on its own standpoint. But world was not made for that. It is meant to create diversity, and that's why this globalization is so dangerous. Just 2 minutes digressing from the topic. Without having a nation's soul, without establishing a nation unit, it is so dangerous to break the nation unit, to break the family unit. Then what happens? You have given a free field to any power which is more stronger. Any one idea which can stamp itself, it will stamp itself and finish diversity. So this is the danger which is looming large. And many youngsters are caught up in this. They say, yes, yes, yes. Let there be all unity. That's not unity. It will end up with uniformity and a chaotic anarchy within that unity. Because it will miss out on rhythm. But that's a different discussion. Right now, let's see how the mind operates. So as we have seen, it can cut, divide, multiply. So it goes on to absurd levels. For example, just to give one example, because there are so many funny examples. So people often say, if you have done a karmic transaction in one life, you have to pay back to that person. Problem is, you make many karmic transactions with so many people. See the difficulty. Now all these persons have to come into contact with you, and sometimes it's made mathematical. Sri Aurobindo writes about it and laughs. Takes a dig at it. Mathematical, that a boy is born in a family and he falls sick, and the father keeps spending money. Ultimately, he is exhausted. You know, if you go to doctors, you have to spend money. And people have this idea, the more you spend, the better the doctor is. The more tests he gives, the more costly the tests. So you end up becoming a pauper, and then the boy dies. Before dying, he tells, you know, you were the fellow who had taken loan from me. This is a story recounted. Now you have paid back. Paid back to whom? To the doctor, not to the man. See, this is the problem. You have paid to the doctor. And not one doctor, many doctors. So this universe being interconnected, to cut things, your transaction with this person. And so it will carry on. This is to cut things into pieces and then try to build them together. We are not dealing with karmic theory here, so we'll stop it, because Sri Aurobindo will talk about it at great length. But suffice it to say, mind cannot go beyond the calculation. Again, in that giving and receiving, it doesn't know the consciousness. Supposing somebody gave you sweets, but with the idea that he's a diabetic, this is the best way to kick him off. Will it have the same repercussions? So we cannot conceive the totality. And that's why we don't understand God's play. So page 170, 171, we'll have some glimpses. So basically, Shobindu is saying that we have to find the links between the mind and the supermind, because then only we can access. If there are no links, life here remains what it is, and the only solution is to go out of the mind. That's how people say, mind has created this world. And at the same time they say, everything has come from God, live by the will of God, and He is in every creature. What a contradiction. But world has been created by God. This is a doctrine which many of the illusionists say, that mind is the author, and therefore there is no hope of changing, because this is the nature of mind. Mind cannot know the truth. So he says, we have not studied, page 171, we have not studied the connections of these four great and divine terms with the three others with which our human experience is alone familiar, mind, life and body. Because up till now, up till chapter 16, Shobindu takes us on a journey from where he is giving us a top-down view. So he speaks about existence, he speaks about conscious force, he speaks about delight of existence, the problem, delight of existence, the solution, three planes, Sat, Chit, Ananda. Then he speaks about supermind. There are a number of chapters, supermind as creator, the triple status of the supermind, the supreme truth consciousness. Then he says, all this we have spoken, all the four high worlds. But what about this world? Our operating system is the mind. So while we may believe in it and have faith in it, but can we become that? For that we have to discover the connecting links. That's what he's saying. So there are seven worlds, and he will go describe all these at great length. We have not scrutinized this other and apparently undivine Maya, which is the root of all our striving and suffering, or seen how precisely it develops out of the divine reality or the divine Maya. So here we have generally the word Maya as commonly understood. Again, we are not going into what Maya is. Shobindu will describe it at great length later on. He has given us a hint in the previous chapter, which we discussed. But generally, Maya is used as a pejorative word. Maya is a creator of illusions. So as if God was overpowered by Maya and he was helpless. If that be so, he can't tell us you guys are so helpless, because he himself is overpowered by Maya. But that is because from this side we see only that Maya which operates and creates division, sense of division. Why it is there? All these questions Shobindu will answer. But there is also a higher divine Maya. That's how Shri Krishna says in the Gita. My Maya. So there is these two statuses of Maya, one which is the higher divine Maya, in which also there is a delimitation, differentiation, but not division. So it is like this, that a person who owns, these are all examples, like, you know, that's how we try to understand. It's like somebody who owns many houses, and in one of the houses there is a tenant who is living. Now the tenant thinks this house belongs to so and so. He doesn't know that there are many other houses which belong to the same owner. So his understanding of the owner is very limited. So here the tenant thinks this is now my house. And actually, if you look at it, after the tenant wants to purchase the house, so he begins to take it, this is now my house. Why? Because I purchased. Why this is required? We can touch upon it. Because you see, if you are living in a house as a tenant, you will never do many of the things which you wish to manifest. You want to make something beautiful, you have to ask the owner. So there will be no evolution. But to help us evolve that whole process, we are made to forget the total picture, that this house never belonged to us one day. And one day we enter, and tomorrow again somebody else will enjoy it. Now people often quote this truth in a very pessimistic way. But that's not what it means. That, well, nobody will, one day you are here, one day you are elsewhere. Imagine Rama saying this, that there is no wife actually, it's an illusion. And Ravan has broken that illusion of minds. Thank God, now I am freed from all attachment to Sita. 5 days I will cry and then this is a forest, I will go and sit with the sages and grow into that light. What a grace that my wife has been taken away. Ram doesn't say that. He knows the complete truth. He knows that, yeah, for the Leela they have become like this. But that greater truth he knows. But at the same time, he must forget that he has to act here in this field in this way. So all of us believe this field is mine and in this we have to act. And this is given to us as means of evolution. And this is my house. It's given to us as a means of our progress. But what we do is we forget that greater picture because we can't act without that. The moment we have this, ultimately this house is not mine. One day children will take it away. Let me go to Vriddha Ashram. No. Children will take it away. Or somebody else will take it away. Yet you must make it as beautiful. That's how the bonsai lesson, that when the master of bonsai, he does something very beautiful. What does he do? He leaves the scissor by the side on the table. Somebody may do it better. That is how it should be, because life is ever moving towards perfection. Whatever is given to me in a given point of time, I must act that it belongs to the divine. I am its trustee. But as a trustee, I must do well. So it's not like it's an illusion. I am a trustee. And if I am a trustee, I must do it very well. But because we cannot act like this, we can only act when we are told this is mine. So the undivine Maya operates. People have this tendency, you know, like country, how they do. Only my part should be fine. But talk to them, forget about supermind, even about nation unit. Nation, all that. Mind trust is mine. So this is the same thing, undivine Maya, how it operates. But there is a divine Maya. There is a way of living in which we can be aware of the oneness. And yet we can act locally on whatever is required at that point of time. Until we have done this, we have woven the missing cords of connection. Our world is still unexplained to us, and the doubt of a possible unification between that higher existence and this lower life has still a basis. If I remain forever a Hindu stuck to my beliefs, and one remains forever a Muslim, another person remains forever a Christian, another forever a Sikh, forever a Buddhist, and forever an atheist, forever an agnostic, forever a secularist, there can be no unification. So when Mother was asked, how can humanity become one? She gave a very simple answer. By becoming conscious of her origin. What was there before all these forms came into existence? Everyone wandering in the forest, how humanity would have sought. So we have to understand this mold is important, but there is greater than this mold which we have to always keep in mind. That's how evolution will take place. So we have to understand that part. So few lines below. We must either exalt this lower being into that higher status, or exchange body for that pure existence, life for that pure condition of conscious force, sensation and mentality for that pure delight and knowledge which live in the truth of the spiritual reality. So this is how the saints explain. Here you cannot have perfection. You see, this is mind, life, body. But there is a perfection. So what you have to do? You have to leave this and go there. Become a citizen of America. Unless you are driven out from there. So this is how our mind thinks, that you have to leave the body mind. This is how saints tell us, that there is a spiritual perfection inside and above. But Sri Aurobindo reminds us that this spiritual perfection is nothing unless it can be reproduced in terms of our everyday life. It's no point saying that mother is inside if we don't behave as if mother is inside with each of us. So this is where, but we are told you can exchange this bodily life. And must not this mean that we abandon all earthly or limited mental existence for something which is its opposite? Either for some pure state of the spirit or else for some world of the truth of things? If such exists, that's what we are told, post-mortem salvation. After death, there you will go in some heaven. Or other worlds, if such exists, of divine bliss, divine energy, divine being. In that case, the perfection of humanity is elsewhere than in humanity itself. The summit of its earthly evolution can only be a fine apex of dissolving mentality. So that's what he says, that is one understanding of evolution, one kind of Vedantic view, not the only one, but the more prevalent one, that the soul evolves through the 84 lakh yonis, maybe few species here and there, new species keep coming. After that, your journey on earthly life is over. After that, there is elsewhere, either nirvana or into the beyond, in some world, Vaikuntha, Kailash. We also hear of Gyanaganj, Shangri-La, somewhere. That doesn't solve this problem. Only a selfish person can do it. Okay, tata, bye-bye, you guys stay in problem, I'm going. Somebody may say that I'll tell others also, but what this life is, why it is there, that makes, it remains unexplained. Page 172. But in reality, all that we call undivine can only be an action of the four divine principles themselves, such action of them as was necessary to create this universe of forms. And again, we can understand it in a very simple way. What is form? The four divine principles are Sat, Chit, Ananda and the Supermind. Call it Atimanas, call it the ancient Maharlok, Vijnanmay Lok, doesn't matter. So, truth, consciousness, bliss and supermind. So, if that is the origin, everything has to ultimately emerge from there. And there is a reason why it is there. Now, why forms have come into existence, these forms? That's why it's called as birth. With birth comes death. There is no birth in the supramental world. So, why this birth take place? Birth is required. Birth, if we don't go by the human idea of it, birth means now there is a form. Form can be anything. It can be a mold of thought. It can be, let's say, an office. So you build a form because now you have to act here in this field which is given to you. This is your field. These are the people with you. So for that you have to limit. Because without limiting things, there can be no. Without limiting things is form. So if we don't limit the ocean or the water and which is joining everywhere, what will happen? You can't have a dam through which you can supply light. You will ultimately have an unregulated flow of all these things till there is drowning of the entire creation. Because that's limiting means now you are channelizing in a certain way. So like gods, gods through each god, the one divine is limiting for a certain action. This limitation, ultimately, once you start the process of limiting, that's where the problem comes, or also there is a reason behind it. Once the process of limiting starts, then the limitation, that power which starts limiting, plays the extreme game. It says, let me see, you know, like some people try to, how small I can write, how small I can divide. You are limiting. So what happens? There is the infinitesimal particle. But because it is infinite, there can be no end to this limitation process. That's why we see scientists trying to discover, first they said electron is the basic particle, then this particle, that particle. When they said God particle, this is the game, na? We got very happy they have discovered God. Such a God will not be worth discovering. They have just called it God, so we are very happy they have discovered God. We get so fooled and carried away. We are looking for the scientists for validation. You can go ad infinitum. Because it is infinite. Keep cutting, keep dividing. Because the consciousness that has gone into it can go to any extent. It will continue, 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 continue. Infinitesimal. That's why the word is infinitesimal. From the infinite, the infinitesimal. That is what comes into existence. But it doesn't cease to be infinite. It cannot. That's why Purnamidam, Purnamadam, Purnat, Purnamudachyate. That's a divine mathematics. But human mind cannot understand. So we have this idea. If God plunged into creation, he is absent there. He is there. In each element he is there. Fully present. But he is channelizing, limiting it in a certain way. How does he limit? Within each one, through his swabhava and swadharma, he limits himself. You have to act in a certain way. So that's what we are being explained, that the entire supermind is in every tree, but every tree will go into the tree it is destined to be. It will not break. So the omnipotence and omniscience of God is there, but it is limiting itself. Otherwise, we cannot have variety. We cannot have infinity in a finite form. So, mind, a few lines below, mind, life and body must then be capable of divinity, their form and working in that short period out of possibly only one cycle of the terrestrial evolution which science reveals to us need not represent all the potential workings of these three principles in the living body. They work as they do because they are by some means separated in consciousness from the divine truth from which they proceed. Where this separation once abrogated by the expanding energy of the divine in humanity. This is the line phrase to be underlined. Their present functioning might well be converted, would indeed naturally be converted by a supreme evolution and progression into that purer working which they have in the truth consciousness. Expanding energy. So this soul is that spark of light which keeps on growing, expanding. So what is the modus operandi? Modus operandi is experiences that the world offers. If you cut short like the ascetic, it remains this and merges. But if you go through the entire cycle, that's the cryptic whole thing, that when Ravan and Kumbhakaran from Jai Vijay, they fell, actually it could have been a very supreme boon. Lord Vishnu tells them, you have a choice. What is the choice? Seven lives as my bhakta or three lives as my opponent. Sounds very strange. Those who oppose God will reach earlier. God will himself come down and tell them, come, you are creating a nuisance. That's how some people explain. Buddha came to take the asuras out of the creation. He doesn't talk about God, no, so people are very happy. So that's why you'll see in all the conferences, scholarly thing, Buddhism has, not that Buddha meant like that, but people take it like that, anatmavad. So basically, why three lives going back as an opponent? It means annulment. Seven lives as bhakta, fulfillment. So basically that fall was an opportunity given to them. It's not like Sanat Kumar was angry and he gave. Nothing happens like that. That is somehow not shown in the serials. Why? But it could have been an opportunity for them to come down from Vaikunth Lok. But when they return back, they become one with the divine supreme. Beyond all the three devas. So it was a boon that he gave. But they were in a hurry. They wanted to get back because after all, Vaikunth is Vaikunth. They don't want to lose that opportunity. So they say three lives. It's okay. So Hiranyakashyap, Hiranyaksha, and then Ravan and Kumbhakarna, and then Shishupal and Kansa. So that's how they go back. So this is where the whole catch lies. That One is cut the knot, another is. So that's why we understand why today, why evolution has entered fast forward. Sitting in one place, one is somewhere the mind is having the experience of so many worlds. London, Paris, Tokyo, France, everywhere you are. So what's happening? Suddenly the mind is receiving so many impacts, and while right now it appears very disturbing because the mind cannot accumulate and assimilate, but its evolution fast forward. All this is entering into the soul, challenging it. And suddenly the soul expands. Earlier, what was the process? There would be invasions. So when invasion happens, the energy in a race is challenged. Like what happened when the Mughals came and the Christians came. First time, the Sanatana Dharma is challenged. It has to adapt itself, discover a new way. It is challenged by this opposition. So similarly, when we grow within, we are challenged by what seems to be its opposite. And we have to take that challenge and we expand. Ordinarily, it happens in a very different way, slow way. In one life, you are Matir Manush, stuck to this place. Another life, you are another place, born another place. Third life, some place you were cursing. Somalia or Chad, you are born there. Okay, previous lives. So all these experiences, that's why the emergence of the psychic being frees us from all this. In fact, Mother says that if one wants to discover the psychic being, first one has to understand that one is trying to discover something which is not limited to any time, place or circumstance, because it has experienced all the different lives and frames. Then only the energy expands. If you have the same people with whom you meet, same city you were born, same things in life, then it won't, there is no growth. In fact, one is likely to get bored. So that's why the multiplicity. But this is not the path of yoga. Yoga takes a shortcut. So by contact with the divine, the entire range of experiences can enter into the ken of a devotee or a disciple, because the consciousness grows into the cosmic consciousness. So automatically when we take to yoga, we begin to understand the different standpoints. That is one of the signs that we are actually on the journey. Our own egoistic standpoint is there. It's not that it doesn't invalidate it. It is valid. But there are other standpoints which are valid, each in its own place and time. And the necessity today of one particular standpoint which must go across to the new creation, this also comes simultaneously. So all this comprehensive knowledge comes when the veil of ignorance is torn without invalidating anything. So, but this requires something, and that should be in the few lines below. The first of these victories, the internal, has certainly been achieved in a greater or less degree by some. That means tearing the veil of ignorance and discovering this universality. Even if never more or less realized in past aeons as a first type for future cycles, and possibly Shubhendu says that in future, in the past aeons, something has been there like a glimpse, not as a realization. That's why when we read the story of Ramayana and Mahabharata, Shri Krishna, we can feel some glimpse. So it has been glimpsed, but not realized in the earth. That's what he wants. It should be a collective realization. Like we all should. Like a monkey glimpsing human is one thing, but monkey changing into a human is a very different thing. The external, even if never more or less realized in past aeons as a first type for future cycles and still held in the subconscious memory of the earth nature, may yet be intended as a coming victorious achievement of God in humanity. So this is where the whole plan he has exposed to us, that there are glimpses and now is the time for the fulfillment, that we can be divine within and yet act upon as. See, this difference is, I don't know if somebody has seen, there was an interview of Devra Bhava Very rarely he spoke, and he was a realized person. He knew about Shobhindra and the mother as realized divine beings, and mother also said he is a realized person. So very hardly he gave interviews. So Swami Vivekananda has gone there and stayed there. So he had his own ways. Suddenly he would kick somebody and people would take it as a blessing or throw a stone. Because nature goes into that, all that Shobhindra will explain later. So there was an interview and the person was insisting that he should take this side or that side. So he says, Rajiv Gandhi, he mentioned. He says, haan, haan, achha hai. So he took the name of opponent. Haan, haan, achha hai. Oh, sab mere se mile hai. They have all met me. They're all good. So the person is pretty confused. If you ask Krishna, you say, yes, yes, all is divine, but right now, be with the Pandavas. This is the difference. One is that standpoint where you go, you have discovered perfection, everybody is God. But another is because that we cannot understand. Supermind is the manifesting power. So it knows the right law of each creature. So Shobhindra gives us this difference. And then he reminds us something very interestingly, page 173, somewhere in the middle. The ideal is an eternal reality which we have not yet realized in the conditions of our own being. Not a non-existent which the eternal and divine has not yet grasped, and only we imperfect beings have glimpsed and mean to create. You see, that's what death tells. There is no ideal. The heavens of the ideal, the dream twilight of the earthly real. Death says all these ideals human beings dream because gods are inspiring them with impossible things. But it has never been realized. Favorite objection we will see against, people would say against the, I won't use the word Sri Aurobindo, but I would say in against the supramental transformation. What is the argument? Has it ever been realized? But I aspire for perfect earth. Has it ever been realized? But I believe there would be perfect love. What nasha you have done today? Antme, it is all maya, moha. There is no perfect love. It is moha. In fact, there is no love. There is no lover. There is no beloved. There is only shivoham, shivoham. So all this you have to crush to enter into that state. So, ideal is a malady of the mind. That's how it is told. It's not practical. But Sri Aurobindo says, no. The ideal is where we, this is a glimpse from that greater truth, but imperfectly held by the mind. It's not that it is, see what happens, people dream of perfect love. Just to take one example. And then they get married and everything is beautiful till they get married. And then they start living together. And then over small things like, you know, how you are hanging your clothes. And why don't you change every day and what? All kinds of things. And if you have two different opposition parties, pakka they'll be split. I know people who were progressing beautifully. Both were devotees of Sri Aurobindo. Still are. But they took divorce. Can you guess why? Because of the Russia-Ukraine war. And I was the unfortunate witness because they would write so beautifully. Our life is so beautiful, everything. I was so happy. Then after some time I get a message, now we have decided to part ways. It's over what? No. My wife supports Russia and I support Ukraine. They are neither of them are, they are not living in Russia and Ukraine. That's the worst part of it. They are living elsewhere. Because the mind takes up this idea and that idea. And we try sometimes to tune in. Some people believe if we are followers of the same path, we will always remain forever. It doesn't, as long as mind is there, it will find reasons to divide. And as long as the ego is there, it will find cause for conflict. So there is no guarantee of same path and same this thing. It's only possible if man has ascended in consciousness. That's what Sri Aurobindo is reminding us. Mind first the chained and hampered sovereign of a human living. Mind in its essence is a consciousness which measures, limits, cuts out forms of things from the indivisible whole and contains them as if they were a separate integer. This is the only thing that mind has, this task given to it. It distributes, and that's why it is said very beautifully, and it is so valid. One of the Mahavakya from the mother, strictly to be followed in the ashram and everywhere in the world. We know it is also told outside, it's a proverb, but mother uses it when somebody complained about somebody, and mother says it's always a good thing to mind your own business. Mind your own business. One phrase which can change our life. So if you just do that, why? Because this is the business given to me. Somebody else has to evolve along a different line. His stage of evolution may be different. His nature is different. His swabhava and swadharma is different. His charitra is different. His constitution is different. But mind wants everybody to follow the same way. You must think the way I think. And if you don't, you have no right to exist. But mature people say, let's agree to disagree. But the totally animal type says, you have no right to exist. No, animals are better. Asuric type. It must stamp its own idea on humanity, that everybody must think the same way as I think. So this is where it all collapses. And therefore, on the next page, 174, mind may divide, multiply, add, subtract, but it cannot get beyond the limits of this mathematics. So everything according to the mind is, when it conceives of God, it's the same thing it says. Why did God not punish this fellow? Because he has done wrong, so the logical consequences and the punishment should be in measure of the evil. Well, God may say, I want to teach you forbearance, come on, to teach you compassion. Sir, okay, but at the end you will punish him? No. No, no, no. I'll do his uddhar. I'll transform him. So you see, this is how the mind calculates. And therefore it can never. So all calculations, and that's why the mother tells about, Shobindu says about the supramental, it is the hour of the incalculable. And all, very interestingly, there's a line in Savitri, suddenness with which divine events take place. So divine events are like that. Suddenly, unexpectedly, something happens and your life changes. Somewhere you hear something, somewhere you end up going, somebody hands you a book, you hear a phrase. It was not in your agenda. It was nowhere there, and it enters. And then you move very smoothly, you happily, now finally. Then again something unexpected happens. Because divine doesn't want us to stay in the comfort zones of the bourgeois life. He wants us to make a samurai. Again. Then again, after some smooth life, finally, now I have reached that retirement time. Again something happens. Unexpected. That's why time's accidents, God's random plan. And we cannot understand it. Because what is happening? Because supermind is the driving idea, the real idea. We may go this way, that way, but it will bring us back to the track, to the trail. So that's how it, mind may divide, multiply. Okay, that last passage on page 174. This essential faculty and the essential limitation that accompanies it are the truth of mind and fix its real nature and action, swabhava and swadharma. Here is the mark of the divine fiat, assigning it its office in the complete instrumentation of the supreme Maya. The office determined by that which it is in its very birth from the eternal self-conception of the self-existent. that office is to translate always infinity into the terms of the finite, to measure off, limit, deep ease. So this Swabhava and Swadharma, that's what Sri Krishna tells Arjuna in the Gita. He says, I am disgusted. I want to take a break. I have heard there is a sannyas ashram. Krishna, relieve me from all this. What does Krishna say? You are a kshatriya, my dear. Even if you step out, you will enter the war. You will see your own people. You are not Buddha that you will go and suddenly, you are not seized by the feeling of Buddha. You are trying to escape from your own Swadharma, it will not happen. You will be pushed back. By then, much misery will follow. So that's why Swabhava and Swadharma are indications of the divine in our own nature. And to study it, we have to free ourselves of all this ambition, desires and all these outer success. Then only we can become aware of our Swabhava and Swadharma. If we go toward these things, this is the cloud of lower nature, ignorance, then we cannot, because we are, will all the time be in that calculating mode, what will give me benefit, what will make me richer, what will make me smarter. So all this will... And next page, actually it does this in our consciousness to the exclusion of all true sense of the infinite. Therefore mind is the nodus of the great ignorance, because it is that which originally divides and distributes, and it has even been mistaken for the cause of the universe and for the whole of the divine Maya. But the divine Maya comprehends vidya as well as avidya. That is the difference. Men become tied to their Swabhava and Swadharma. It's a hint of the divine in us. But we want again do the same mistake. Everybody must follow this. That's a problem. Then it becomes avidya. So the divine comprehends both knowledge and ignorance. So that's how Sri Aurobindo begins essays on the Gita. So he says, people draw a conclusion that everybody must act and fight because that's the command given to Arjuna. Sri Aurobindo says, to someone else, if Buddha came and asked Sri Krishna that I am seized by the agony of the world, should I govern the Sakya kingdom or walk away? And Sri Krishna would say, walk away and discover the solution. Or if Sri Ramakrishna comes and says that, well, what should we do? Look after my parents, teach vernacular in Sanskrit, do the daily puja which has been given to me, and be a pujari in a temple. What will the divine say? No, Sri Aurobindo says that. No, that's not what is given to you. You have to become a leading light in this whole world. You have to become one with Kali and create a Vivekananda, your Shastra, who will go out into the world and awaken people. So that's how we have to look at it, that Swabhava, and we forget, but the divine keeps all these standpoints together. That's how the difference is. But the divine Maya comprehends vidya as well as avidya. It's not that he does not know the ignorance, the knowledge as well as the ignorance. For it is obvious that since the finite is only an appearance of the infinite, a result of its action, a play of its conception, and cannot exist except by it, in it, with it as a background, itself form of that stuff and action of that force, there must be an original consciousness which contains and views both at the same time and is intimately conscious of all the relations of the one with the other. And this what Sri Aurobindo calls is the divine mind. This is the contact point where vidyancha, vidyancha, yastha dvedo bhyamsa. So there is a meeting point where both are comprehended, where one knows the oneness and one knows the multiplicity, and in multiplicity, each one's law of being along through large eons of space and time. That's why the divine guidance is never uniform. That's why quoting the mother and turning it into a dogma is so dangerous. That's why Sri Aurobindo says, what I say to X is meant for X and not for Y. And what I say is meant for Y, to Y is meant for Y and not to X. Generalizations, yes, we can form. But still, and that's why we cannot understand mother's ways. Somebody who is going very wayward, and Sri Aurobindo is yet constantly sending the grace, constantly. He is saying, Lord, I did it again. Telegramming to Sri Aurobindo, and Sri Aurobindo is sending blessings. And to somebody else, he would say, if you continue this way, there is no hope. Why is, saying not no hope, but you are turning away from the grace. So this is how the divine operates with each one in his own way. And we cannot understand it because we are in avidya. So we have to operate in the system given to us, and that's why there is hope. The divine understands us, and when the time comes, he will pick us out. And there's a beautiful line in Savitri which describes it. That's why this all idea of converting, family members should also follow the same path, others should also the same path, it's too dangerous. If they are not meant, when the time comes, they will enter into it, leave it to them. There's a line in Savitri, you follow the path which is given to you. And that line is, whole passage is that our errors are his steps upon the way. One who has made this world is ever its Lord. Our errors are his steps upon the way. He works through our sorrows, our sins and tears. He works through the hard breath of battle and toil. Whatever the appearance we must bear, whatever our strong ills and present fate, when nothing we can see but drift and bail, a mighty guidance leads us still through all. A date is fixed in the calendar of the unknown, an anniversary of the birth sublime. Our soul self-justified, checkered walk, all shall come near that now is not on or far. And then the two lines specifically, after we have served this great divided world, one has to go through avidya. There is no shortcut to perfection. Not that deliberately you have said, oh, okay, I have to enter. No, one goes through, this is the process. After we have served this great divided world, God's bliss and oneness are our inborn right. So it's not about hastily breaking the veil. It's a process of evolution. Divine wants to roast us in dhimi aach so that we become perfect food for him. We want to increase the temperature and be roasted soon, then jala hua roti. Even the divine would find it bitter. So all the experiences of life through which we go through, each taking us one step closer to that where vidya and avidya both become one. One nourishing the other, understanding the other, guiding the other, leading the other towards itself. So we'll stop here. And come back after 5-7 minutes to complete this chapter.